We're visiting with Greg DeHoat, the chairman of the UK Cannabis Social Clubs, who was recently a guest on BBC Two for one of the most popular morning television programs in the country. Let me give my listeners here a little snippet of that appearance of yours on the BBC Two. And who was the, what was the program again?
It was the Victoria Derbyshire show. So it's kind of your main breakfast TV show in the morning on BBC Two. So like, quite a middle-class audience as well, so this is exactly the demographic we need to be breaking into.
All right, let's give a listen.
They're two different products. Your first caller is probably has experienced skunk.
Well, we don't know.
But they're very different products, aren't
they? It might be.
That's my point.
Hang on.
In the room, though, like, yeah. When we're talking about skunk and we're talking about cannabis, they are the same thing, I'm afraid. Like, yeah. GW Pharmaceuticals' genetic library that they grow is skunk. It's bought from the breeder of a skunk man, Sam.
Okay.
He is the creator of the skunk strain. That's what GW Pharmaceuticals are using to make Sativex.
Okay.
Which is to make Epididiolex.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Sativex is CBD.
It's CBD and THC. Two strains from skunk genetics.
It's licensed. It's regulated.
You're not surely saying we should have recreational skunk.
It is like most.
You are saying that
the same cannabis that I use for medicine is the same cannabis that people are using on the streets.
Okay,
it's the same cannabis that's been regulated in America and it's being sold in dispensaries out there.
Okay,
the term skunk is just a scare word over
all
here.
Right.
I am so glad you made that distinction, Greg. And for our American listeners out there, this is a thing that goes on in the UK where they try to distinguish what is the current cannabis, you know, they call it skunk because, you know, the smell, from the cannabis that people might have used back in the day. It's kind of similar to our framing in America from Project Sam when they say not your father's Woodstock weed, that today's weed is so much more potent. And you making that point there on national television, I think was very important. I'm sure a lot of people got a reaction out of that.
Like, I knew in my head, and I did that people would be fist-pumping the air with, like, yeah, go on, Greg, because that's what I'd be doing. I've been waiting 10 years to say that on TV or to politicians, and I got it. I got the prime spot. I got the last minute, you know, the last bit of the section of the show as well, and I think it helped, you know, that helps it stick in people's minds. I think it was such a pro cannabis argument that was put across by the politicians on the show, and even there's a professor from Nottingham University, Sue Price, she's on there and she calls the politicians spineless. Because she's the head of policy at Nottingham University, and they actually do a lot of clinical research on cannabinoids there, which I can tell you a little bit about later. But you know, she's agreed with everything that I said, that, you know, we need to decriminalise personal and medical use than the right to grow at home. So I think our message to the UK CSE, I think we've honed it in. We know what the public expects and will respect out of cannabis social clubs and people who use cannabis. I think we've just got to take that message as far mainstream as possible now. So expect a hell of a lot more press from me.
I know also there have been other sorts of guerrilla marketing that have been used in London, for example, double-decker buses with big vinyl wraps on them for supporting, you know, nice people take drugs, was it, I think. Are those kind of campaigns still ongoing?
We are personally, the UK CSE are personally trying to raise money to do some more billboard campaigns in the UK. We've not had the financial backing in the past. If you are someone in the States who is interested in seeing some progress in the UK and you want to get in touch to help make it happen, get in touch now. Like, we can actually make something really cool happen here and reach a lot of people. I one of my favourite political stunts that was ever done in the US movement is Dr. Bronner getting in his cage and making hemp milk and butter out of seeds, hemp seeds, and handing it to people outside the White House. It just drew so much attention to it, and I want us to be able to have, you know, the right kind of membership and the right kind of support and, you know, business and industry support behind us to be able to pull off those kind of jaw-dropping stunts and sort of like it drew a lot of attention to it. I still tell people about that now and show them that video and they're like, wow, that's crazy, you know, I'm going to remember that. And it's about getting people to remember things. And I think, like, billboards in the UK hasn't been done before. That needs to be done. I want to be the first one to do that with the UK CSE. I've just bought a load of nice URLs, so web domains, that I can put in public, and they don't draw attention to cannabis, but they draw attention to sort of like, oh, hang on, what is that? I need to go and check that out. Like, no victim, no crime, and right to grow. You know, why? You know, what is that? Go and click on those websites, and we're going to sticker up a few towns, places that that people, and you know, people who need to know those messages, but it's not going to blatantly put cannabis everywhere.
It's kind of surprising to me when I think about the politics of cannabis in the UK. When we look over to Canada and they've just legalized, we look down to Uruguay, they've legalized, and even right there in Europe, the example of Portugal with its decriminalization of all drugs, and like you said, the Netherlands, just a 45-minute flight away. What's behind this intransigence in changing the cannabis laws? Is it, I mean, in America, a lot of it was, you know, oh, those damn hippies and they're left wingers and they hate the Vietnam War and God and the American flag. I mean, what is it culturally that's stopping you there?
What's America doing? And then we'll follow that. And like, that's what's happening now. That's what happened before, really. I mean, we did actually ban cannabis and hemp before you guys did. We did it in 1928. I think it was like the League of Nations. Mm-hmm. The Egyptian delegate got up and said, we need to ban hashish because it's like heroin and opium, and it's really bad. It stops people from working and it ruins lives. And they didn't realize that they were actually banning hemp at the time. And if you think about it, sort of like the Egyptians getting hemp banned, and then you're like, Egyptian cotton is the best in the world. You got to wonder, was that a little bit of a conspiracy going on there as well?
Uh-huh.
But in the process of like hashish farms being, you know, cut down, I guess a lot of hemp farms were cut down in the process as well, because it's practically, you know, the leftover from making hash is the fibers, isn't it? So we've had cannabis outlawed since then, really. And in 19, we still had it as a medicine up until 1970, but 1972. But after the Misuse of Drugs Act came in, which was after the, you know, Nixon's all-out war on drugs came in, then it's been out the pharmacopoeia ever since then. Hmm. And there's been a few people, there's been a few movements. It's not been completely dead in the water the whole time. There have been movements that have got things going in the past. There's been, you know, cannabis coffee shops that have opened up in the UK. One of my friends, Winston Matthews, he opened one down in Worthing, not far from where I'm sitting, like, you know, half an hour down the road from where I'm sitting now, in a cannabis social club that we've just opened up. So there, you know, those attempts, you know, they got us to places, and the UK wouldn't be in the situation it was now if we didn't have like such a, you know, a strong group of activists in the past. But I think what's happened now is just a completely new wave. We've followed what's going on in the States. We've got Spain just down the road as well. Like, that's an hour and a half on the plane. They've got 1,000 cannabis social clubs, over 1,000 cannabis social clubs in Barcelona. So we've seen what the business side of it can become in a few different forms, and seeing what's going on in America. And that language connection has allowed us to sort of go, right, we know what we want to do. We've been able to speak to all the people in the States who are doing what they're doing because of the language. Then there's no real language barrier. And a lot of people have gone over to the States, seen what's happened, and come over here and gone, wow, we really need to step our game up. Mm. And I think, like, when I came back from the States in 2011, it was a whole different situation. There wasn't a great deal going on. There weren't collectives or, you know, groups and people clubs meeting up or anything. We literally started that when we got back from the States. Mm. And it's grown into something quite spectacular. We've got over 160 clubs involved with the UK CSE movement. We've got probably about 250 overall in the country. There's probably about 12 actual cannabis social clubs in London now, or coffee shops. Some of them are like gangster run. And it's just drop in place. You buy, it's £20 a gram. You go in there, you can smoke. It's filled with tobacco. And then you've got clubs that are following our kind of ethos, whether it's smoking pure, vaping, dabbing, edibles, more of a community feeling. And like that, people are jumping around and going to the different clubs and seeing what's going on, and then going, I can do this in my area. Let's go and make some change. Let's be the change. And I love that. That's literally why I set this up.
Yeah,
I saw what you did with the chapters in the States, and how you know how each of them sort of like fed into to normal back then in 2011, and that's the kind of sort of like structure that we needed in the UK. We didn't have the local bases, and it's such a small kind of island. It's big enough. It's a decent size, but it's small enough to be able to be all connected, and big enough for us all to be doing our own thing.
Mm. You know, I'm interested also in, you know, the day-to-day existence of cannabis consumers like yourself there in the UK. You just said in passing there, getting cannabis for 20, what did you say, 20 euro or 20 pounds?
20 pounds a gram in some of these
so
places.
But $26 in the current exchange rate for my American listeners, $26 a gram. So, and when I was there, what's that?
Yeah, carry on. I was going to shock you. I spoke to Dread Smokes Weed. Shout out to Dread Smokes Weed, back from who I met as a normal show live as a stasher. He's working for DNA in Crockett Farms now. I managed to catch him on a Facebook chat the other night, at, like stupid o'clock in the UK. But it's always nice to catch up with someone from the old crew. And I'm telling him that some of the weeds, like the lemon tree stuff that's in California, it sells at £30 for an eighth. Over here, it's £125 for an eighth in a tin.
Wow. Yeah, that's the thing that was interesting to me is that how you guys are getting your cannabis shipped to you in these dry-packed, vacuum-sealed, kind of like almost like sardine cans.
Yeah, well, they're doing the nitrogen-sealed tins in Cali. I think it's just because it's so novel over here, people are going nuts for it. Then people over here have even bought tinning machines and tinning up UK weed and selling it with their own labels on, because that's how people seem to want to buy it. And it's like, all this packaging, it's just herbs, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Put it in the same jar every time, go back to your guy with your jar or your club with your jar and use that. Plastic is drastic. Tins are wasteful.
Yeah. Well, what are the risks, the penalties for possessing, growing, and selling cannabis?
In the UK, for possessing it, you get up to five years. Selling it or growing it, you can get up to 14 years. Obviously, with different quantities and weights.
Yeah.
But under 9 plants growing it, they don't deem it a commercial outfit. We term that as a personal use. It's not commercial; it's personal, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so we suggest to people grow 9 plants. That's the safer number. You're not going to get a custodial sentence for it. We actually offer tags you can put around your plants. So if you've got up to 9, we'll give you tags for them. And if you get busted, our legal team said they will help you, because you're following a model. You're trying to show respect for the sentencing guidelines. It isn't the law, but it's showing you're taking this into consideration. You're trying to be respectful, and they feel that that's a much better way of trying to push for legalization than everyone just growing on their own and going, well, I was growing under 9 plants. It's more of a cannabis growers union. So none of our clubs have been busted on those respects. None of our personal collectives have been raided at all. So we don't know if that's going to work, if it is going to work in court. But the point is, we all want to stand together, and we've got thousands of us that are doing it. Mm. And that hasn't been done before. That shows you that there's people willing to work together and willing to respect something that is put into place, which is our model of self-regulation. And hopefully that shows that we can, while we're in this political situation, well, we're able to put our cards on the table and talk about how, what is going on and how things should be in the UK. We can show people that, the government, that there are people out there that are willing to respect regulations on home growing. And it's not something that could be, should be sniffed at or be scared of.
One final thing before we let you go. Let's make sure everybody that wants to get in touch with the UK Cannabis Social Clubs knows how they can do so. Could you give them some contact info?
Yep. If you want to get in touch with the UK CSC, you can go to ukcsc.co.uk. We've got a website there. It's got lots of information on it about growing collectives, how to start a club, how to join a club. We've got an interactive map on there. So if you want to find out where your nearest club is, you can actually physically see where the clubs are, what towns they're in, what cities. We provide regular news updates on there as well. We also love to post on Instagram, UK Cannabis Social Clubs. On Twitter is UK Cannabis Clubs, and on Facebook /UKCSC. And we have regular daily updates on there.
Fantastic. And to end this on a note of whimsy, there is another Oregon to UK connection that isn't me and Greg. Turns out there's a 25-year-old in Southern Oregon named Tyler Dooley, and he is he has developed a special strain of cannabis called Markle Sparkle, named after his aunt, his aunt, I guess we would say in the UK, who is now the Duchess of something, isn't she?
Duchess of Sussex, which there is where I am, in Brighton. Where
she's your Duchess.
Unfortunately, what they've done is, like, because she's from California, they've given, they've put the poppy on her emblem. And we were a little bit sad about that. We was hoping we was going to get a ganja leaf because it's all gone on while legalization has happened in California. He's actually got quite a bit of press for that in the UK. And so that's been really good for our campaign. They've related the royal wedding to weed quite a lot. I can't say I'm unhappy. I have actually tried to reach out to Tyler and say, would you like to come to Green Pride? It's our pro cannabis festival down in the South Coast. We're going to have about 5,000 people there this year. It's our fifth year. It's going to be brilliant. We've got about 50 stalls coming down. The police are aware we're doing it. They came down a little bit heavy last year, but we've had chats with them. I think they're going to be a little bit more respectful about it this year. And obviously, because of everything that's gone on, this is going to be like the celebration, you know, to celebrate that medical cannabis is actually happening in the UK. Like, I cried, Russ. Like, I think I messaged you, like, I just cried, they've legalized medical cannabis. Or, you know, it's like it's happening. So I think it's going to be a really good celebration. I think people are going to come out and go, yeah, you know what, I'm not scared anymore. I'm coming out about cannabis.
Mm. I hope I can help you make that happen. My partner is well connected with the folks down there in Grants Pass, and so maybe we can find a common contact and get them flown out there for you.
Sound. I like that. That sounds really cool.
That would be right. Awesome. Greg DeHoat is the chairman of the UK Cannabis Social Clubs, UKCSC, out there on the internet, and a good friend from, gosh, it's almost 7 years now, seven plus?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, since 2009, Russ.
Oh.
2009. That's nearly 10 years.
Nearly 10 years.
You indoctrinated me, let's be honest. 2 hours a day of pro cannabis, like the most professionally produced cannabis show like you can come across. I'm like, okay, I know what I'm doing now. Like, can I keep up with this? Like,
oh, right, well, you've definitely eclipsed anything I've ever done. I appreciate everything you're doing there in the UK, and thanks for joining us here on the Marijuana Agenda.
Cool. Thanks for having us, Russ. Peace out.
All right. And I'm going to get back out there one of these days on my dime. So maybe I'll fly out with Markle's nephew.
Dude,
that'd be awesome.
Cool. But like, I didn't say what date it was. It was 21st of July. That, like, that's when we're doing this Green Pride. So not long at all.
Oh, geez. Okay. I'll get right on it.
Yeah, dude, that'd be awesome. Yeah, thanks very much for that. That was cool. My confidence is back up quite a bit with the whole radio thing now.
Right on. I'll send you the links, of course, and best of luck to you.